Good afternoon. So my name is Sujal Das. I work at Mellanox Technologies in product management. So thanks for coming. Some exciting times here. Last few days, both inside the convention center, also outside in the rest of the world. The elections, Trump still gone. Britney Spears filed for divorce. And then inside the convention, we learned a lot of acronyms, if not more. A lot of VBI, VCB, and VNV, and all kinds of stuff. So a lot of interesting stuff. So today I'm here to talk about InfiniBand. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with that name and the technology. So I'll give you some introductory background on InfiniBand, and also go through specifics on what we have done with VMware, with the ESX server or the VI3 product, and when the solutions are going to be coming out. So just a little bit of background on me. I have been in the industry, mostly working in the networking field for almost 15 years. Up until I came to Mellanox, I was predominantly working on Ethernet and wireless LAN technologies in companies such as AMD and Marvell Semiconductor. And back in AMD, when I was there in the 1999s, I had some exposure to InfiniBand before AMD came up with HyperTransport. They were considering InfiniBand as an interconnect for CPUs. So I had some exposure then, and then I worked with Ethernet all the time, and then I'm back in InfiniBand. So there's a lot of exciting things happening around InfiniBand. To give you a brief overview, in the last 2 years, there has been quite a few acquisitions around InfiniBand. Cisco acquired a company called Topspin, and they have added InfiniBand as part of their product portfolio for data centers and the high-performance computing market. So the InfiniBand switches from Cisco kind of go hand-in-hand with the Catalyst 6500 products, for example, and Cisco has also integrated their Cisco Works LAN management software to work kind of seamlessly over both LAN and InfiniBand environments, where you might use a Cisco Ethernet switch and a Cisco InfiniBand switch. QLogic, who is a predominant player in the fiber channel space, as well as iSCSI, they have also acquired, actually they did two acquisitions in the last 6 months or maybe 9 months. They acquired a company called PopScale, who make InfiniBand adapters, and recently they acquired Silverstorm, who makes switches based on Mellanox's products. So we have a competitor as well as a customer in QLogic now. But I think the key point here is there's a lot of activity in that market. As Mellanox, we are a private company. We recently filed our S-1 for IPO. So again, things are moving in the right direction with InfiniBand. So I have the presentation divided into three parts. The first part, I'll briefly introduce the company and the products, how we make money, so that you have the perspective on what Mellanox is. And then we'll talk about some of the trends in the data center in terms of new connectivity needs for connecting storages and server products. And then we'll get into kind of like the meat of the presentation today, which is how have we worked with the VMware Community Source Program? How have we worked with the VMware engineering team to integrate InfiniBand into ESX Server 3 or VI3? We'll share some of our experiences, some of the enhancements and optimizations we have done, both on the ESX kernel side as well as on the InfiniBand driver side. We'll present you some again, this is a work in progress, but we'll present you some performance numbers, both for SAN, storage, as well as networking. And then we'll go more into the end-user benefits area, where we will basically map all of the benefits we are seeing of the solution we are developing at VMware, how they're going to help the end-user in enhancing ROI in virtual server environments. We'll also talk about release plans briefly. And some future enhancements. So with that, let me start off introducing you to Mellanox. So we provide InfiniBand adapters, which are also called host channel adapters. And we also provide silicon for the host channel adapters. So we typically provide silicon to Lanadon motherboard designers, such as, you know, Intel has motherboards. There are other tier two motherboard manufacturers in Asia. So we provide HCS silicon to those vendors. And we also provide silicon for InfiniBand switches. So those are typically used by the likes of Cisco, Voltaire, and other companies. So our focus today is obviously on the adapter side because that's where ESX server is involved. And in terms of products, we have today shipping for about a year now, 20 gigabits per second InfiniBand adapters. We have been shipping 10 gigabits for almost 3 years now. And some of the key value props with InfiniBand adapters are power consumption and latency besides bandwidth. Now, why is latency important? We're showing that 2.25 microsecond latency. Compare that with Ethernet 10 gig products. The best latency you can get are probably in the range of 15 microseconds. That's with very specific switch configurations or switch suppliers. Why is latency important? When you connect a lot of commodity servers in a cluster, and when your application requires guaranteed performance in terms of from the time you you send a request till the time you get a response, if you want guaranteed latency, such as in trading. Trading is a great example. So when you execute a trade, you need to have the trade executed within certain microseconds, and delays there can cause a lot of losses for financial institutions. So when you have to get such kind of guaranteed responses, and especially in environments where there's a lot of data that needs to be crunched by the servers before the response is sent back to the client, such as again in trading where what is called market data. So every time you buy a share with E-Trade, the servers are crunching through a whole bunch of data, which is exploding in huge amounts. So when you have to do a lot of calculations, a lot of computations between servers and provide a response within a certain time, latency becomes very important. Power, our 10 gigabits per second adapters consume 3.5 watts per port. This is significantly lower than any other 10 gigabit NIC solutions that you see in the market today. And this is important. You know that data centers are looking at lowering power consumptions in their data centers. And according to Gartner, I/O stuff that you plug into the PCI slots, they consume as much as 10% of the total power that the server consumes. So this is a significant amount of power, and we need to watch out for how much power the I/O devices consume. Aside from that, InfiniBand is also known for its ability to converge different kinds of traffic, so you can actually consolidate your I/O and run storage, networking management, IPC, all kinds of traffic over the same I/O pipe, over the same InfiniBand adapter. So that's a key difference from, example, fiber channel, where it's dedicated for storage only. How do we make money? So we are a semiconductor company, so we make silicon, and we make software to enable silicon to run on systems. And we basically provide our products to OEMs, so all of the major tier one OEMs, HP, Sun, IBM, Dell, they ship servers, blade servers with InfiniBand products. In the last 6 months, HP has announced their C-class blade server solution, which includes InfiniBand. IBM has their Blade Center C product. And Stein also announced a blade server product with InfiniBand recently. On the storage side, this is kind of a little new for InfiniBand, but we're getting a lot of traction with native InfiniBand storage. So what a storage box looks like is it's got InfiniBand in the front end to connect to a switch and to the servers, and on the back end you can have SAS, SATA, or fiber channel disk drives in the back end, and These boxes provide a lot of performance benefits in terms of SAN throughput and SAN performance in general. Recently, Oracle announced their 10G rack product, which at Oracle OpenWorld, they announced TPC benchmarks, which beat everybody else, including IBM DB2 and Microsoft SQL, very handsomely. And they were able to achieve those benchmarks using InfiniBand and using InfiniBand attached storage from their partner companies. Sure. Okay, so the question is, who are the manufacturers of InfiniBand native storage today? So there are two primary companies, DataDirect Networks, with whom Cisco works very closely as an OEM. There is LSI Logic. They acquired a company called Ingenio, which is part of their storage products. So LSI Logic has products that are shipping. And there are several OEMs, or storage OEMs, I cannot name them, that are working on two major ones, that are working on native InfiniBand storage boxes. Those are not out in the market yet. I cannot say that, comment on that. But between EMC, IBM, Hitachi, Sun, two of them are working on it. So. NetApp uses our products in the filers, but as a backplane. So it's a clustering of their filers, and they use InfiniBand in the backplane. There's another company called Isilon who also filed for IPO recently. They also use InfiniBand in the backplane, and they provide file system-based solutions. On the flip side, we have, again, Cisco, Volterra, and others who provide different configurations for switches. The 288-port switch that you see there is the highest configuration switch. So you have 288 ports of 20 gigabit per second throughput in that configuration. And obviously the OEM sell to end users who fall into the three segments that you're seeing on the slide. So moving on to the software ecosystem, I think that's very relevant in today's discussion. So unlike Ethernet, 10 gigi or fiber channel and other connectivity technologies, InfiniBand software has matured as part of this Open Fabrics Alliance organization. So if you're not familiar with what Open Fabrics Alliance is, their website is openfabrics.org. It's a community of major OEMs and ISVs and OSVs. So IBM, Intel, AMD, Sun, HP, Dell, everybody is in there, including ourselves, Qlogic's there, Cisco's there. So it's a collaborative way of developing InfiniBand software in an open source environment. And we have had significant success with certain distributions that have been released from Open Fabrics. Again, this is work that is done by the companies, the commercial companies, but these are distributions that are coming out of Open Fabrics and finding their way into the Linux kernel, finding their way into Novell, SLES, and Red Hat distributions. And also, the Windows versions of those products are being wheedled by Microsoft. Yes, sir. InfiniBand is a standard. It's a specification that was written in the early 2000s as part of the InfiniBand Trade Association. So there is the IBTA.org organization that has published the InfiniBand specification, and it's an open specification that anybody can implement.
Okay, but it's not a published standard.
It is a published standard now. It's not part of IEEE, so you won't see 802.something. It's different. It's InfiniBand. So it's
not a standard. AMD is a standard. X is a standard.
Well, depends on how you define a standard. So if you're talking about a specification being there from an organization and it being open for any vendor to adopt and make products out of, then that is there. If you're asking if it's part of ANSI or IEEE or IETF, then the answer is no. Okay. There are certain protocols, however, that you list, the software protocols that are part of IETF. So, for example, IP over IB that you see there, and I'll go through this slide momentarily, but IP over IB is the IETF specification, for example, that defines how IP traffic can go over InfiniBand. So this slide is basically showing an adapter right at the bottom, and going on the top, you have a device driver and a set of APIs that are defined as part of the Open Fabrics Alliance, which provide both the control and the data path. And on top of that, you see what I call upper layer protocols. So IP over IB is a protocol that attaches to the TCP/IP stack on the top. And similarly, the other one that is highlighted in blue is SRP or SCSI RDMA protocol, which is basically attaches to a SCSI interface on the top. So the ones that I show in blue are the components that are relevant for the integration work that we are doing with ESX server. There are other components that are shown that you can look up or we can discuss later if you want after the presentation. In terms of market penetration, again, OEMs are our main channel to the end users, and you can see some of the market segments where we have gotten traction. So moving on to some of the trends in the data center that we hear from our customers and analysts, industry leads. This is obviously most probably familiar with you, but I want to highlight one point here, that in the old data center, you had different tiers, you know, front-end, back-end application tiers, which were separate islands of servers, and they all had their own connectivity needs, and they had their own connectivity solutions. So, for example, in the front-end, which web services are one example of front-end, you could potentially do with just 10-100 fast Ethernet. While as you go to the back end and the storage side, you know, you need higher performing I/O such as fiber channel or a 10 gigabit Ethernet or InfiniBand that is getting deployed in those tiers. So basically, you had server islands with different connectivity. Going forward, because of virtualization and sharing of resources for higher utilization, you have one pool of servers now, and basically you have you need a uniform connectivity across all servers now. So gone are the days when you can populate one server with just 10-100 because it's just a front-end server. Now every server needs to be able to meet the needs of every application that you might need in the data center, because using vMotion, for example, you would be moving stuff around the servers. So the key point on this slide is you need uniform connectivity, and that connectivity needs to meet the demand of the highest performing application in your data center. The other key trend is for 10 gigabits per second connectivity. Can you sustain your future growth with less than that? That's the core question here. And the adoption of multi-core CPUs, the adoption of SAN, the need for consolidation of networking and storage over the same pipe, and the need for sharing of resources, all of these things are driving the need for I/O to new levels. And because of these, we believe that in the very near future, as more and more multi-core CPUs and more virtualized servers get deployed, the stress on the I/O is going to become great to the point that you will need 10 gigabits per second connectivity. Today, you can get around it by putting multiple adapters. So, for example, VMware supports very nifty features like teaming, where you can team up multiple gigabit adapters. You can use multiple fiber channel adapters and meet those needs. But going forward, as you have blade servers, which are very thin, form factors are very small, you don't have the luxury of putting many adapters, and you need to consolidate and potentially use one or two adapters that provide you all of the functionality. And the second key trend is the trend for IT managers. So there are two dimensions to what IT managers are trying to do today. First is to create a data center to provide services as a business utility where things just work, where you need to do more with less. So VMware has been doing fantastic in this area of transforming data center IT organizations into business utilities. There is the other end of the spectrum where companies are also looking at IT as a competitive advantage. How can you get quicker business results? How can you do things faster? How can you get a trade executed faster? All of those things are happening on the other realm where people are expecting more from the IO so that they can get competitive advantage. So there are two areas that IO needs to serve. With the work that we are doing with VMware, we cover, as you will see through the rest of the presentation, we cover a bulk of the upper part of the requirements. And as we go to other solutions, newer solutions, such as IO pass-through, where performance and latency considerations can be addressed in a VMware environment, we'll be addressing more and more of the lower half of the feature list. So one last slide on capabilities of InfiniBand. So what we offer is what we term as service-oriented I/O. So to meet the needs of the new data center, to meet the needs of the IT managers, there are two specific areas we offer that we club under service-oriented I/O. First is quality of service. So offering end-to-end quality of service. So this is, we are talking about QoS where you are relying on the switches in the infrastructure dropping packets, and then TCP in the server working in the OS taking care of congestion. So we're talking about your hardware-based end-to-end quality of service and congestion control. And by doing so, we are able to provide a solution where you can run clustering, storage, and all of the data center applications over the same wire. And the second key point here is that InfiniBand provides path management, so in terms of how links are set up, how you can create what are called factory networks or cross networks. You can really scale your network to very high node count clusters. So, for example, with InfiniBand, we have production deployments of up to 4,000 node clusters. While with 10 gigabit Ethernet, because it doesn't support class and it has all the spanning tree related restrictions, you can at best go to about 300 nodes, unless you do something proprietary. And all those services are made available to virtual machines, and I'll talk more about how those services become available to virtual machines. But the key here is to be able to provide guaranteed services under the most adverse of conditions. So here's an example of how end-to-end services is provided with InfiniBand. So first is quality of service. So it's more than just AWS 1P. In our adapters that are shipping today, you can have multiple flows that can be hierarchically mapped to queues in the adapter. And we also do shaping in the adapter, which allows for allocation of bandwidth in the adapter itself. So when you're talking about virtual machines trying to carve out a part of the IO adapter for itself, this feature becomes very handy, where you can actually allocate bandwidth in the adapter itself for a certain virtual machine or an application in the virtual machine that might be very critical to the data center. And in terms of congestion control, what InfiniBand provides is layer 2 based, so it's not layer 4 TCP based. So all of the congestion control is handled in the data link layer, not in layer 4. And what this gives you is ultimate flexibility and in terms of how congestion gets managed or how fast congestion gets managed in the data center when, you know, congestion points move from one place to the other. So you don't have to rely on software, it just gets done by the hardware. So in essence, you can get a very high level of services using InfiniBand I/O. And all of those services can be made available to VMs. That's the key point. Now, the picture you're seeing here is more a pass-through architecture. So this is not what we're implementing with VMware today, but this is what we can implement with future versions of ESX when pass-through like architectures become available. If any of you attended Malik's session yesterday on I/O virtualization, he spoke about adapter support, what adapters need to do to enable effective pass-through architectures in the VMware environment. Those features are all available in our InfiniBand HCAs today, and it's just a matter of time of enabling those in software. So things like intra-VM switching, isolation done in the hardware. So a lot of the stuff that is done in the vSwitch today, for example, can be done in the InfiniBand HCA. The flip side, too, is that it affects great functionality that VMware provides, such as Virtual Center, vMotion, and other things. So, there's a trade-off always. But we believe that in the future, those problems will be solved, and the hardware is ready for that. Two other points on power and performance. And the next slide, we're going to talk about cost. This is a comparison of InfiniBand adapter trying to keep the scale even between all of the three adapters. The two lower ones are 10 GB NIC adapters from different vendors. The key point I want to show here is that InfiniBand has all of the feature support that you'd expect from a 10 gigabit per second adapter in terms of bandwidth, power, support for remote DMA, support for stateless offload, and as well as full offload, which means offering the full transport into the hardware. And there are other vendor solutions. You can see they have partial solutions, consume more power, and the number of silicon and parts that you see, including heat sinks that you see in those solutions, basically speak to the maturity of InfiniBand in this market space. We are on the third generation, about to announce our fourth generation next week, and these solutions are in the first generation. Price per megabyte. This might be a surprise to some of you. A lot of the market has a perception that InfiniBand is expensive. If you look at InfiniBand's end user price per megabyte per second, and end user price includes the adapter port, the cable, and the switch port price. So if you compare that against 10 GB IWARP or GigE, you can see that InfiniBand fares better than even GigE if you compare it based on price per megabyte per second. Sure. Yes. You're absolutely right. So it's hard to quantify the benefits when you put applications together. But yes, I mean, thanks for pointing that out. You could go to Oracle, look at their 10G rack announcements, talk to Oracle, and see the benefits yourself. And we're hoping that very soon you'll be able to just contact VMware and they'll tell you the same thing. It's coming. Bernie's right there. Yes? Yes. No, you don't. I'll talk about those in the upcoming slides. Okay? So you don't. So let's get into the specifics of what the solution is. So we have been working in the VMware Community Source Program that VMware launched about 9 months ago, I guess. We were one of the first members in the community. There has been very active involvement with VMware since then. Just between yesterday and today, you know, I'm on the email reflectors that the engineers use to discuss specific problems and resolutions in the community source. And I think if I count it correctly, between yesterday and today, when actually the VMware engineers are supposed to be here and presenting, there was about 50-55 email exchanges on this project itself. So it's a very active development process. Now, why did we decide to work in community source? Obviously, our primary motivation is obvious. We wanted to work with the most the gorilla in the market, so to say, in the virtualization space. So VMware has got great market traction. Even other than that, there are other companies in the industry that have got great market traction, but you don't get the spirit of partnership from them. So we have had very good partnership, excellent support. So it's been a very very fruitful experience so far. And of course, we're not doing work for yes. We have not worked on the Viridian version of it. We have done some work on your virtual server R2 product, on your hosted architecture, where we have used the Windows drivers. We have Windows drivers available today as well. Okay. So I was saying that obviously we're not doing this for charity, so we have the ulterior motive of working with VMware to get products out in the market so that users can use it, server OEMs can put those on their servers, and the eventual deployment of VMware products with InfiniBand is the business reason why we're working with them. Why didn't we focus on Xen? Xen is a great technology, but we did some surveys. We didn't see many real-world customer success stories. Multi-OS VM support was not as comprehensive as VMware is, and the go-to-market possibilities with Xen were limited at the time. So we have been very active, and we're happy with what we have done with VMware so far. So getting into specifics of what is getting integrated into the VMware VM kernel, the ESX Server VM kernel. So we looked at the software ecosystem slide before. This is a much simplified version of that of the software stack. So what you have is the hardware below, a device driver, and two heads to it, basically a network interface using IP over IB on top of the device driver, and a SCSI interface using SCSI RDMA protocol, both which talks to the SCSI file system blocks in the VM kernel, for example. So what we have started with in the InfiniBand integration with VM kernel is with the Linux drivers, because VM kernel is similar to Linux. We have added the storage and networking functionality into VM kernel. It's been sourced from the OpenFabrix distributions. And our drivers use the 2.6 kernel APIs. So in terms of integration, that has been the most challenge for us in terms of how do we get the 2.6 friendly or 2.6 based drivers to work in a VM kernel environment that is 2.4 based. So I'll talk about some of the work that we did. So some of the challenges we faced, obviously I spoke about ESX Linux API being 2.4 base. Also, even within that, not all of the 2.4 APIs are implemented. So there are stuff that we expected that were not there. Some of the 2.4 APIs are implemented a little differently. Okay, this, the memory management scheme is different from standard Linux, and the build environment is different. And then how you set up your adapters in that environment using Virtual Center and others is different from what you're used to. Again, I'm not saying it's normally proprietary, has a negative tinge to it, but I think Virtual Center and everything that VMware provides in terms of configuring your adapters in that environment are excellent. So it was just a learning ramp for our developers to get used to that whole environment. What did we do? So here are some specifics on some of the work that was done. The upper half of the slide shows what VMware did from their side in terms of either optimizing or enhancing the VM kernel. And what we did on the InfiniBand driver side, again, this includes both IP over IB and SRP, to make both of those environments, both of those components to work together. So on the kernel side, I think the one big change, I think this is the only big change really, everything else was cosmetic. And between VMware and Mellanox and everybody else who's participating in this project, we made very cautious decisions, very stringent decisions about not changing too many things in the VMware ESX 3.0 code base, because we wanted to keep things as much same as possible so that it's stable and it can go to market quickly. So very few changes were allowed or implemented, and the spin lock implementation was one thing that was new. There were also changes made to the loader to export Linux-like symbol mechanisms so that they were more friendly to our drivers. We also requested a new API for the network driver to access information from the virtual switch to implement vMotion functionality transparently over InfiniBand, and also enhancements in the SCSI command in terms of multiple scatter lists. On the driver side, it's basically adding an abstraction layer so that our 2.6 based driver would work in a 2.4 environment. And then there are changes in the area of network and storage. On the network side, use of the new API that VMware provided, and on the to enable our implementation to work within VM kernel, we had to limit one SCSI host and a net device per PCI function. Normally we support multiple, but to enable a SAN and a networking functionality using ESX kernel, ESX server over InfiniBand, we had to make this change. So these are basically what we have done, and I think we are at the point where there are very few changes being allowed as we work through towards a release that customers can use. And with those changes, what have we achieved? So let's look at some of the benefits of the solution. So this is a pictorial view of what I just described. So probably will answer some of your questions. So at the bottom of it, you have the InfiniBand HCA, and then you have the network driver and the storage driver plugging into the VMware infrastructure, such as the vSwitch and the SCSI file system layers. And then the double lines show the storage flow of information, and the single lines show the network flow of information. And the key point here is, as one of you asked, on the virtual machine, which I'm showing as VM0 to VM3 and VMN, there is absolutely no change. So what is running within the VMs, they are still seeing the standard NIC interface that they are used to seeing. They're still seeing the standard HPA interface that they are used to seeing. So there is nothing new here. There is no InfiniBand functionality in the virtual machine. The same applies to the virtual center. The way you manage using the virtual infrastructure, using virtual center, You are basically managing, again, NICs and HPAs, and you are not even aware that there is InfiniBand underneath. So that's a very key aspect of our design decisions and product decisions, to keep things simple, keep it easier for the IT manager. Sure. Today, the QoS or any of the policies that you want to implement in this architecture is what VMware supports as part of their Virtual Center product line. So to be able to allocate bandwidth directly in the HCA, you need the pass-through architecture, where VMs can, or applications within the VMs can directly allocate resources for themselves and get the bandwidth they need. In this architecture, you have the virtual switch, for example, that is actually kind of brokering the bandwidth in the InfiniBand adapter across the VMs. So one scenario I know of is that between storage and networking, for example, because you're using the same adapter, and if you want to make sure that your storage applications get the appropriate amount of bandwidth, and you would rather slow down the network but have the storage be given the right amount of bandwidth, you can use features available in VMware to actually, I don't know what, it's something to do with rate limiting. So these are features that are available standard even for NICs, which can be applied in this environment. But that's great feedback, and I think, you know, as I said, we're trying to disrupt minimally and get a product out with minimal changes. So we're trying to fit ourselves within the framework that is available and customers are used to, instead of creating new things. So one of the key value props with InfiniBand in ESX is what this picture shows. So a typical configuration with ESX Server based on survey, survey information that we got from VMware, is that typically there are multiple Gigi NICs and multiple fiber channel adapters that are used. Numbers that you've heard are up to 4 gigabit Ethernet NICs and 2 fiber channel HPAs. With InfiniBand, because you can consolidate, you can effectively get all of that functionality using one InfiniBand adapter. Of course, if you want failover, you would use two InfiniBand adapters here to be able to failover. And you can do failover two ways, using two adapters or using two ports in a single adapter, which will be a little more cost effective. So what we have been able to achieve using the work that we have done is we've been able to get 3x. This is still a work in development. We are 2x. Gigi performance today. So what you can achieve with the gigabit Ethernet NIC in ESX with InfiniBand, we are able to achieve 2x, and we are progressing towards 3x. The goal is 3x for the first release. So what that means is effectively you are being able to replace 3 gigi NICs using the same InfiniBand adapter. And on the SAN side, we have had much better success in terms of pumping up the performance. We are able to get up to 10x the performance that you can get with a single 2 gigabit per second fiber channel adapter. And I have more performance numbers later on, but that's the key value prop with the solution is consolidation and being able to do more with less, and at the same time being able to extend your SAN performance dramatically. Yes. So from the VM going to the outside world, today we are getting, you know, up to 2 gigabits per second of bandwidth, which again you can, if you apply it across multiple VMs, that gets divided up. The goal is to get 3. Sorry? It's optimization work. If you want to go further up, as you heard from, if you went to the presentation yesterday from VMware on IO virtualization, you know, there are things like MSIX, being able to distribute your processing across multiple CPUs. All these enhancements need to be made, which requires further changes in the ESX side of things. We're trying to minimize those. So there are, bottlenecks in various areas, either in ESX or in the way our drivers work today. We need to change a few things to fit into the VMware environment better. So it's just a matter of some work and enhancements that can allow us to get there in the future. Great feedback. We understand that. So we are trying to make it a factor of three. Hopefully that's better than two. I think we'll be able to achieve it in the next month or so. But this is a work. I think the next release, instead of using IP over IB, we might use a more RDMA transport offload kind of mechanism, which will pump up the bandwidth to 10 times.
So is that on your roadmap?
This is on our roadmap with VMware, yes. We are working with VMware on the pass-through, IO pass-through mechanisms, and when those products become available, there will be direct access from the guests to the hardware. Again, we have to be aware of the situation that things such as vMotion and other things that the market is so much fallen in love with that you cannot sacrifice that functionality. So the pass-through model has trade-offs, and we just rely on VMware's advice to us as to what's the best thing to do for the best market adoption, and we'll go the route that they advise us on. Yes, so vMotion works over the IP over IB networking path. There has been ongoing discussions about doing vMotion using RDMA. That is not part of the first solution, but you can do vMotion over the InfiniBand adapter with this solution.
Have you got any performance
for vMotion?
Yep.
Not yet, no. The components are available. So what you need is what is called boot over SRP. There are those components available, but those are not part of the first release. Yes. Yes, I think these are great feedback, and we love to hear. It's coming in again. What is planned is what VMware terms it as an experimental release for people to look at it and give us feedback. And these are great feedback we're getting. So I think before we go to production, as and when we do, these are things that we'll take into account. Okay, so so just to highlight a few things about how you can manage the InfiniBand seamlessly using Virtual Center. This one shows snapshots of the Virtual Center screens. So what you see are two ESX servers on the left-hand side of the screen and with multiple virtual machines in those. And what we're also showing you is the storage adapter configuration. So you can see the Mellanox adapter showing up as VM HBA2. And you can also see the properties of that HBA2 adapter in terms of LUN and the capacity. There's another screenshot that shows the storage configuration again, with the SRP S0 showing as the identifier for the VM HBA2 device. And again, you can see properties just like you would see in a regular HBA. Okay. And on the networking side, again, it's the story is the same, except that instead of the Mellanox adapter showing up as VNIC2, which is what it should be, in the version that we used when we created the presentation, there is a cosmetic change that's needed in virtual server, because typically the virtual center is used to having separate adapters for storage and NIC, and we are combining both of those. So it's still looking, seeing it as VHBA2 when it should be VNIC2, and there are things that need fixing. But again, it shows how you attach the VHBA, the VNIC2 to the V switch, and by doing so, you're able to do V motion and other cool features transparently. So I'll show you some performance numbers for SAN storage. What we use is an Intel server, Woodcrest server, with an InfiniBand adapter. And in the server, we have ESX server running with multiple virtual machines and the InfiniBand drivers in the ESX server VM kernel. And it's connected to an InfiniBand switch, and then we have storage targets. Now, these are reference designs that Mellanox has for storage that we used to have back-end SATA drives in the back-end. And using this configuration for SAN storage using IOMeter for 128 kilobyte read benchmark. So on the left-hand side, you see is the performance, basically IOMeter running on a VM. You see up to 1,500 megabytes per second of performance from one VM. And then if you divide the SAN across two VMs, it kind of divides up evenly at about 800 megabytes per second per VM. And then you go to four VMs. You see about 400 megabytes per second per VM. So effectively, it scales very evenly as you have add more and more VMs. And what we're showing here is that it's same as having 4 gigabits per second fiber channel HBAs dedicated to those 4 VMs. So that's the scale of performance and savings that you can get out of this solution. As part of the community source work, we are testing the solution with multiple vendor products. Obviously, we're using Mellanox adapters. We are also using switches, InfiniBand switches from Cisco and Voltaire. We are using a native InfiniBand storage from LSI Logic, as well as fiber channel gateways from Cisco with EMC backend storage. So, in terms of benefits, if you want to put them in numbers based on our analysis so far, we believe that with this solution, you can reduce your initial purchase cost of purchasing the adapters for your server by up to 40%. You can lower your per port maintenance cost, so this is your ongoing maintenance cost per port, by up to 67%. You can lower your I/O power consumption per server by up to 44%. And the great thing is you can get all of those in a seamless way because you don't, you know, your VMs and your virtual center is basically transparent to what's going on underneath. So best for both worlds. And in terms of real application performance, it goes back to your question about how much do we improve vMotion. These are things that we think will improve, but we are not sure how much. For example, consolidated backup. recovery cloning, deployment of virtual appliances, as well as running of database and file systems. Anything that is fan intensive, if you're running it on the VMs, those can be accelerated, and these are, again, benchmark data that is not available, but in the near future, we'll be doing benchmarks and making those things available for those who are interested. Experimental release plan. So with VMware, we're planning an experimental release with ESX Server VI3. There will be a Mellanox InfiniBand drivers package that will install with that version of experimental release. We are targeting late Q1. Again, this is not a committed date, but this is something in the plans. If you need further details, more specifics on when, what, etc., please contact Junaid Qureshi, VMware Product Management, or myself at Mellanox, and you have the contact information there. Future work, obviously we would like folks to, server OEMs, end users, solution providers, to try out the experimental release when it becomes available and give us feedback. And based on the feedbacks, there are plans to have GA products. And then future enhancements, again, based on customer feedback. We got some great feedback today. We'd also want to accelerate vMotion using RDMA. Again, some of the comments that came about, we definitely want to improve networking performance to be 10x, not 2 or 3x where we are today. So to summarize, InfiniBand has traction in certain markets. It's a lot of OEM traction. 10 gigabits per second is going to be required more and more in the data centers. And then our work with VMware in the VMware Community Source Program, creating solutions that provide very good price, performance, power advantages. With that, I'll open up for questions. Yes, please. So the question is, how do you emulate multiple VLANs using vSwitches in the VMware environment, correct?
Well, how does your InfiniBand interface, how is it able to connect multiple vSwitches?
Sure. Okay. So again, let me qualify that. So the current solution does not have VLAN support. Now, the way to enable that is the use of what are called, in InfiniBand, there is a concept of partitions using what I call partition keys, which are similar to VLANs. So there is work that needs to be done to map those partition keys to an Ethernet-like VLAN configuration that can be plugged into the VLAN support that VMware has for next today.
So each partition is a set amount of bandwidth. Would that be configurable for virtual center, or would you have to configure some
other way? I really don't know the answer. The goal of the project would be to enable that the way you do it for NICs. So if there are provisions within Virtual Center to allocate bandwidth to VLANs, then those should become available transparently. That's how we would implement it. Now underneath, we would allocate bandwidth for specific partitions in the InfiniBand way. Any other questions? Yes.
How does the IP packet from the virtual machine goes over InfiniBand with the classic LAN network? Are there IP from InfiniBand to
Ethernet? Yes, there are. So yes, good question. So if you have a LAN environment, Ethernet LAN environment, you have gateways. Again, those are there from Cisco. Volter and others, so you would use a gateway to connect to a LAN environment. Same thing for fiber. If you have a legacy fiber channel network that you want to plug into, you would use a Cisco fiber channel gateway. For a fiber channel gateway? Yeah, there are three vendors actually. There is a company called Volter, and there's a company called Silverstorm, which is part of QLogic now. they all provide storage and Ethernet gateways from InfiniBand. Yes, please. It stands for host channel adapter, and it's equivalent to HBA in the fiber channel world and to NIC in the Ethernet world because it can do both. Yes, let me finish with him. No, one NIC to one IB. So you have one DD NIC and then you put one IB adapter. That's how you get 3X. You can always put 3 gigabit Ethernet NICs and get the same performance by teaming. So the value is basically consolidation. You know, in blade servers, if you don't have enough slots to put so many adapters, you just use one and then you save on per port cost and other benefits, power. Yes, please. Sorry, he had a question. Let me take his first. Yes.
What would be the learning curve for customers?
So for networking and storage, it's SCSI. And as far as configuring within the virtual infrastructure, you just use virtual center. Same like. Yeah. Yeah, so if you want to configure the InfiniBand network, there are subnet manager, it's called the subnet manager in the InfiniBand world, available from various vendors. You know, Cisco is probably is the one that's the best in the market. So they have a subnet manager that you can either run from their switch or their gateway, or you can actually install it on a server, separate server. And it's got the necessary, you know, GUI and integration with Cisco's LAN manager and others so that you can kind of seamlessly manage the InfiniBand network, bring up as well as after it's up and running, you know, looking at statistics and logs and all of that stuff that you're used to in Ethernet and fiber channels. Yes. The question is, if you use two HCAs for failover, is it active-active or active-passive? I guess it's a question for VMware. So the way you do teaming for NICs, again, the failover is being done in the VMware ESX server layers. So it's part of the VMware software package, and we're just providing two adapters here. And you can do teaming and failing over just like you do with NIC. And I believe VMware does active-active, so.
Does it act more like a NIC or more like an HCA? Are those behaviors in VMware to be different?
I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't know the answer. And feel free to, you know, get my email address in the presentation, so I'd be happy to get back to you on those. Native Windows environment and Linux environment is active failover, and we have two implementations, one for networking and one for SRP, SCSI. So what you have is, if you remember the picture, you have the device driver and IP over IB, and then we have a failover, a high-vis failover software component that sits on top of that, which manages the failover, NIC failover. And then we have a similar component over SRP that manages the failover in the storage scenario. Active, passive functionality. Okay. Both components, correct, you're right. So, Yes. So I know it's supported. There are two sides to the equation. The way failover works on the storage side is there are failover components on the server side, which is called the initiator side, and there are failover components on the target side. So, for example, LSI logic, the storage box that we talked about. So, between what is provided on the server side and what LSI logic provides, for example. I believe it can, but I'll have to get back to you with specifics. There are some dependencies on the storage target. When you initiate a failover from the server side, there are some dependencies on the target side as well. So when we implemented the failover on Linux, for example, we did have to work with the storage target vendor to make sure that the way we did failover initiation on the server side was consistent with how they would react on that side. Any, yes, please. So what's the question is, what's the length of the cable? What's basically supported? So for 10 gigabits per second with copper cabling, you can go up to 20 meters. For 20 gigabits per second bandwidth, you can go up to 10 meters. And with fiber, which is a more expensive option, you can go up to 300 meters for 10 and up to 100 meters for 20 gigabits per second. No, using fiber optics connector, using fiber cables to connect your servers to storage. Yeah, from the internet to the switch and switch to the other end, yes. So if you want longer distances than 20 meters, then you typically use fiber, server to server. Okay? Any more questions? I hope it was useful for you. Again, thank you for coming. Hi.
Sure. Your fourth generation chip you're going to be out next week. What's your roadmap going forward for PCI Express Gen 2 support?